Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour. This is for August 31st, 2017, the end of August, heading into fall. I bet a lot of you are, sometimes people are happy to see summer end, some are not. But fall is always a wonderful time of year, unless you're living in Houston. Wow. I'll be talking about that a little bit. Just a tremendous disaster there. First of all, though, however, I apologize for the last week. People have been asking. My page has not been updated. I've been out of radio range, and I had experienced a power outage and some other difficulties that usually happens when I'm in a book release, which is, by the way, in progress, too. I had some delays there due to this book is a little bit different than other books, so I had announced it. I thought it was going to be out last week, and then it wasn't. So anyway, that's all I can tell you. It's a monumental work, by far the most detailed presentation I've ever had in my life, and that's saying quite a bit compared to the weather book or other books that I put out. But anyway, this will be out. I'm working on it, and I really want this to be excellent, well done when it goes out. So that's you'll see when you finally see the book. And on the wing generator, I had listed on my webpage that licensing is available for people who want to develop the wing generator. And there's understand it's not one thing. There's many directions that this can take, and that's why I'm offering development licensing. But I have to screen people, and so in terms of that, just email me. There's email address, I'll repeat it later, jmcc@jmcanneyscience.com. That's the webpage email address, and I'll contact you, give me some contact information. But I really have to interview people so they understand what this is all about. Let me explain a little bit. You have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to follow directions. You have to, this is resulting from some people I've had problems with. They don't communicate. They go off into left field. I tell them, hey, we've already tried that, and that's not a good plan. And they go and they keep doing it anyway. And, you know, so you have to be able to follow directions. You have to be able to communicate. You have to pay a licensing fee, which is ongoing. There's an initial fee, because if you're going to develop something and bring it to market, you have costs. And so this is not a garage project where you quick throw a few things together. And I'm also dealing with other people in different capacities. Some people are not licensing. I have people who are doing other things. They have other talents. They have other things to offer. So if you're a person that has something to offer or know other people, there again, I have to interview people who are likely candidates to help. And as I say, there's many different types of help, not only building and mechanical type things, but other types of help. So if you are that type of person, feel free to email also, because and it's not just building one. We have many. There's many different size models, many different base styles, many different options. And so this is a complicated project. And if I had, for example, Elon Musk's Deep Pockets and, teams of engineers that we could hire, then we would do this all in-house. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So, and it's been a very wonderful experience dealing with certain people who are very professional and are able to bring something to the table. Let's just put it that way. So if you're one of those people, or you just want to help, or say, how can I help, then we can, like a tennis match, bat the ball over the net a few times and see what comes out of it. So anyway, the email address, once again, if you want to help or you have mechanical capabilities or electrical or something like that. And a lot of times people don't have the whole picture. They're mechanically inclined and other people are electrically inclined. No given person or group is going to have the final total solution. And I help people, and you know, I'm happy to help people as long as they are responsive. Okay, so anyway, once again, this is for the wing generator project. And by the way, there's a lot going on in the background already. But like I say, you have to be able to communicate and basically receive information and put out information, etc. So once again, the email address, jmcc@jmcanniescience.com. And I'll spell out J. McCanny Science. It's my name. I'm sure you all know how to spell science. I hope so. But J. McCanny is JMCCANNEY. So there's one J, there's a one M, there's two C's, there's one A, there's two N's, EY, at, or let me see, I'm sorry, science.com. So it's JMCC@JMcanniescience.com. Okay, so enough of that. On to the hurricane down in Texas. The absolute level of destruction down there is amazing. And in 5 or 10 years, Trump was down there, and I heard him talking. And by the way, Trump is the first president in a very long time to go visit a hurricane site. When Bush was in office, remember, there was Katrina. Well, Bush never went there. He flew over in an airplane, looked down, and then kept going. Never went there. During Obama's reign, there were major hurricanes. He didn't go there. He didn't. Remember, his wife was going to go, and they told her not to show up because the black communities didn't want to see her. And Obama, once again, didn't even make an attempt to go. He was off golfing. He had too important a golf date. But Trump is the first president to actually go and walked with the people, went into meetings right at local level, talked to people about their problems. And then CNN has the nerve to say he did not mention the local people. I mean, CNN is such a piece of trash. The only reason I go there is to see what disinformation they're trying to pound out on a particular day. And that's one of them. I mean, what a disgusting, CNN, you might call it CIANN. It's owned by the CIA, one of its groups that they purchased it after the first Gulf War. Remember Saddam Hussein and George Bush Sr., who's, by the way, George Bush Sr. was never born in the United States. I don't know if a lot of people know that. George Bush Sr. should have never been president, and in fact, George Bush Jr. was not born in the United States. He was not a U.S. citizen at birth. They changed the papers. Their name is Schiff, and the old man was an import who structured the banking system and a lot of other things. Remember that George Bush's old man was the guy, Prescott Bush, as he was called, or Prescott Schiff is his real name, who was the Trading with the Enemy Act was passed by Congress during World War II to block George Bush's dad, Prescott Bush, from trading with Germany during World War II. Congress actually had to pass a law. They're a piece of trailer trash from a long time ago. And remember in 1943, when Tesla died, it was none other than George Bush, what we call George Bush Sr. now, that went in with one of the infiltrators from Germany and the United States and actually... The story is they suffocated Tesla. And I talk about that on my paid cast. But that story came out on the deathbed confession of, what's his name, Skirnovsky? I'm not pronouncing it, Skirnevy or something like that. He was a German spy. And George Bush Sr. went in with him and watched as they suffocated Tesla. And the reason they did that was because Tesla was on his way, had packed his bags and was on his way to England to sell a defensive technology to the British. And it was not his the beam energy device. It was not that one. It was a defensive mechanism. And I talk about that back in October in my paid cast. I have a whole series on Tesla's large military weapons, and I include the story about that in that section. But at any rate, the Bushes never showed up to New Orleans. They during Katrina, it's very obvious that that was a manipulated storm. It was sent there to shut down the port of New Orleans and to basically socially engineer that city to get the black people out of the lower ward. I used to live in New Orleans, and the levees were blown after the hurricane had passed to flood those lower regions of the city, which actually had survived quite well. I mean, there was wind damage. Of course, there was a hurricane. But the big damage in New Orleans was due to the flooding, which came after the hurricane had actually passed. The day after the hurricane had passed, I saw street cameras downtown New Orleans. There were people walking around. The streetcars were running. And then they flooded the city by blowing the levees in seven places. And they said, oh, that's due to the storm surge off Lake Pontchartrain. No. No, the seven places where the levees were blown up, literally, to flood the city, and that's when the real damage occurred when they blew the levees, the day after the storm had passed, and was not due to storm surge. You just can't imagine the amount of just fabricated disinformation that gets pawned off on the public through the news media, through places like CNN, and people believe it, and they listen to it, and they respond that they think that's what happened. No, not at all. Okay, well, back to the hurricane in Houston. In the mid-1990s, I developed two techniques for steering hurricanes away from land. One of them was a series of buoys that would be placed out, and Houston would have been a perfect place to use this. And this was given to the U.S. military through intermediaries, not directly by myself, but through intermediaries. But the idea was to take and drop buoys that had a metal anchor, a chain anchor, and then coming up from the buoys was a carbon thread or metal thread with a big weather balloon that would be up. It doesn't have to be high, maybe 1,000 feet, no more. And you'd put these all along the shoreline, but off coast, offshore. And what it would do is short out the hurricane electrically. And once that happens, it would dump all its water offshore. So you would not have this tremendous damage. The damage at Houston, you had a hurricane, obviously, but the real damage in any hurricane, the majority of damage, is the rain that goes along with it. And in Houston, the infrastructure damage is due to rain, the tremendous amount of rainwater. And, of course, there it's flat, so it has no place to go. At any rate, that was one technique for attenuating a hurricane. And the second one was the laser satellites that then around the year early 2000s, the military sent up a bunch of big satellites. They claimed they were communication satellites, but they were the laser satellites that then they started using to manipulate storms. And that's where I say Katrina was one of the first ones in the early 2000s under when George Bush Jr. was president. And then we had all of those manipulated storms in the early 2000s. There were dozens and dozens of them. People have asked if Hurricane Harvey was manipulated. I can tell you for sure the manipulation techniques could have taken it offshore and drug it away from land or brought it into an area that was not as heavily populated, not into the main city of Houston. So there again, why are these technologies not being used to save the area? I cannot say if this hurricane was manipulated or not. The reason for manipulating a hurricane is typically, we could see why they did it with New Orleans, with Katrina. We could see them doing it in Florida, where they had four hurricanes crisscrossing Florida in a matter of a month, destroying trailer parks and the people simply disappearing, just places disappearing off the map. In Houston, I cannot call that. I don't know. I don't have a verdict. I've heard people on the internet making claims, and I don't concur with the claims that I've seen. But the other motivations, etc., there does not seem to have been, at least visibly, a motivation for destroying Houston. Now, there again, I guess people could create any conspiracy theory they wanted, but not like Katrina. Katrina was very much a planned event. They knew that Katrina was going to hit New Orleans when it was still in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, still developing before it even became a hurricane. They knew it was going to hit New Orleans. Well, that's impossible because it could have taken any one of 200 paths. So it's absolutely impossible to know that. I know people that I had heard in conversations saying how much money they were going to make off Katrina when it hit New Orleans. And I was in meetings where I overheard people talking about that. And sure enough, that's where it went. And also the path of Katrina, it came under Florida. And then it went, and it still hadn't developed, and then it went straight across the Gulf. And then it made a 90-degree turn and went due north to hit New Orleans. And the news reporters were saying, oh, this is definitely going to New Orleans, definitely to New Orleans. And it absolutely impossible to make that prediction unless somebody had some pre-existing knowledge of where that was supposed to go. But I don't know with the case in Houston if this was manipulated or not. It all of the other factors that go along with it do not seem to be there. But also going back to Trump is the first president. Obama didn't go to a hurricane. Bush didn't go to a hurricane. And Trump goes to visit the people. He's right there on the ground. He's walking around talking to people, trying to strategize how best to get this thing going once the water drains away. Yesterday, apparently, was the first sunlight they had seen, but more rain is going to be on the way. But it just absolutely devastated that area. I've met people who are from there, and I was not even near there, but I met people who are from Texas and said that they had basically been stuck wherever they were because they're waiting for the call to allow them to go back. Entire cities associated with Houston area were evacuated because the water, the contamination, there's no toilets. There's just no way that anybody could exist there. So they basically evacuated the entire area. And plus, it's a drain on the police and the agencies if they have people there. So they cannot have people in these areas because there's no way, there's no services, there's no way, there's, you know, no food. So they literally had to just evacuate vast areas around Houston. And then the storms continue to move inland, and so there's going to be other flooding in other areas farther inland from this series of storms. But the amount of water that fell broke all records. It just shattered any record relative to the amount of water that fell. So I'm sure there's relief efforts, and usually the best thing to do is to send money to legitimate relief efforts. And that today is getting harder to find. I wonder if the Clinton, the foundation, is going to go down there and start looking for money to help out. Last time they did something, they stole all the money. And, well, anyway, the whole issue with Haiti, if you haven't followed that, and the Clinton Foundation, there's a tremendous amount of information online. But it's really a shame in this modern world of plenty where there are relief agencies that get in the middle so they can profiteer off the hardship of others. It's just absolutely insane. I mean, there's just got to be a special room in hell for people like that. That's all I can tell you. Man, anyway, find a good agency, the one that's reputable, and, just give your support. That's all I can tell you. I cannot recommend any myself. Now, I knew this was going to happen. I'm switching gears talking about the solar eclipse. I did not mention a word on my webpage other than just go to the standard sources and find out what to do. And the reason I didn't is because people can misinterpret things or take them incorrectly and then say, well, I read this on James McCanney's webpage, and I knew a lot of stupid things would be going on, not the least of which was people would be buying $2 sunglasses or solar glasses, whatever you call them, to look at the sun. Well, your eyes are very sensitive. And, you know, you don't know who's making these things, where they come from, if they have the capability or the, you know, properly made, or they're just selling something that looks like they're shading from the sun. And I knew a lot of people could have eye damage by, buying incorrectly built, manufactured little solar glasses or whatever they call them. And so, and plus the congestion and the other things that went along with it, I did not mention anything other than the fact that it could have been used to disprove general relativity. But this story just out, there were some people in California who put sunblock on their eyeballs to look at the sun, if you can even imagine that. Just unbelievable. People put sunblock, you know, like you put on your skin to protect from the sun, put it on their eyeballs and then looked at the sun. I mean, good grief. In this day and age, you can be guaranteed that people are going to do something completely radically stupid. And that's one of them. So now you know why I did not make any announcements about the solar eclipse. And I'm sure there's a lot of people went to it and had a wonderful time. But as with anything, it's like the few complete idiots that ruin it for everybody. Quick mention here about the Cassini mission. It's about to make its, or NASA is about to send it into the Saturnian atmosphere, ending its life as a viable satellite. Now, this is absurd. Why in the world would you take a couple billion-dollar satellite that's been 14 years of perfect data gathering and destroy it? Could it be because you don't want anybody else to get the data from that spacecraft? One thing that at least publicly was never done was, since this was orbiting Saturn, it was on the near side, then the far side, and et cetera, and around the poles, to measure the redshift of the radio signal. And that would be due to my theoretical work. It says the induced electric dipole redshift, it's an electrical redshift because of the non-uniform electric field around Saturn. And it also could have measured this around certain moons that are also electrically charged. And so there's an experiment that would have been immensely valuable to the world of science. This is basic research science, where we could have measured the redshifts due to the electrical effects, and it could have been used as a measure of electric fields around Saturn. But none of this was done. And there again, one of the side uses or the collateral uses of that satellite was completely, NASA completely oblivious to good science that could be done. Another thing that could be done with some of these spacecraft that have microwave detectors that are in the far reaches of the solar system, they should be getting a very different view of the microwave, or what is called the microwave background radiation, that supposedly is from the Big Bang. Well, you would get a different perspective being out around Saturn. And that's the point. If you had two vantage points, it would be like eyes that could see out, and we could see that these nodes or locations of microwave background radiation are in fact near us, not at a distance. It's like you have two eyes, it gives you perspective. You can see, if you look at something close to you on the desk, you say, okay, this is, you can tell how far away it is because you have two eyeballs, and your brain has learned to understand perspective and to put that information together to give you a distance. And if you have one eye, then everything looks like just on a plane, and it's hard to get perspective. But the same thing would happen if you had the Cassini mission or other similar mission out far in the solar system. And then with microwave detectors, you could triangulate on a certain region of the sky and see if they're seeing the same microwave signatures from the same part of the sky. And what I would predict is that you're seeing that the source of that microwave background radiation, or say just simply leave the word background out because that would imply Big Bang. But you could look at the signatures and then get a perspective, because you have two vantage points, and determine that it's much closer, in fact, just right around our solar system. It would be very easy to do. But experiments like this are totally out of the question at NASA, because I always love when they say they're going to go to Mars, next program for Mars, they're going to go and learn about the interior of Mars. Well, they already have the model designed, and so they're just going to try and confirm what the model already says. Same way with the Dirty Snowball Comet model. They're just out there to prove it no matter what, because that's their belief. At any rate, okay, so the Cassini mission, this amazing satellite, did produce a tremendous amount of data, but all of that data kept within NASA, not given to independent scientists. And by the way, that's where I got a lot of my research information when I was at Cornell. The Voyager and the Pioneer spacecraft and the Venus orbiters, all those spacecraft were out around the planets, and I was able to see the data. That's when it was, that was before when NASA locked everything down and kept it to themselves. So I was able to see data, corroborate it, and with my theoretical developments, and basically prove my ideas. And boy, did they get mad when they found out that's what I was doing. And so they started blocking data, preventing it. First it was, well, it's a one-month period that the principal investigators get it. Then it was 3 months. Then it was 6 months. And then it was like, well, we don't know what happened to that data. Yeah. That's your friendly local national space agency at work, hiding data, basically, for insider. That's the perfect example of scientific insider trading. Okay, on to the next topic. I'm going to talk about the solar eclipse just a little bit. I've spent a lot of time looking on the internet, NASA sites and space.com and all these different sites that post pretty pictures of the solar eclipse. And of course, they have a lot of them, not a lot, but a fair number, that a lot of them are about the crowds and, you know, seeing the background, seeing a, say, a wood setting or other crowds or whatever in the background with the little teeny sun up in the sky. But some of them are of the direct solar eclipse with the moon blocking out the sun. And what's interesting is they have photoshopped all the stars out of the photos. There's not a single one, there's not a single star visible in any of these pictures posted by NASA. They have actually gone to the trouble to remove the stars so that nobody could see them. That is just beyond incredible. And the reason, of course, they're doing that is because people could measure that the stars are not moving. What happens with an eclipse is that supposedly is what was used to prove general relativity. And if people could say, well, these stars are not moving radially outwards with the total eclipse, and they're not, the movement is not proportional to the distance from the sun. So all of the factors that would supposedly prove general relativity are not there. So what do? They remove the stars. They photoshopped out the stars. If you can find any place, a photograph where there are stars around the sun, then please let me know. But I've looked and looked, and everything I found online has been photoshopped. And you should see all the stars, you know, as if it were nighttime. There's a little bit of glow there, but still the stars in relative, in terms of light, in terms of luminosity or brightness, the stars should show through just fine. But they're all photoshopped out. This is just beyond incredible to me. So at any rate, check that out. If you can find any photos, any place online or amateur photos, whatever, that show the star patterns, let me know. And remember, I had a program set up, and I did not tell amateurs, because the last time I did this, some of them got threatened. It was a Comet Watch, International Comet Watch, for amateur astronomers, and my webpage was hacked, my email was hacked. Some of the amateurs who were trying to get information to me there were people who went out and threatened them. And then NASA set up its own Comet Watch program for those comets, and of course never mentioned anything about the spike, the sunward spike, that was the whole purpose of looking at these comets, is because they were involved in a planetary alignment, so sunward spikes would be developing, and we had a perfect broadside view. So it's actually, NASA is in the business of preventing the public from seeing real information, photoshopping stars out of solar eclipse pictures so that nobody has real data. This is beyond ridiculous, because you could take that and match it to a photograph of that region of the sky, and you could see that the stars, by zooming in or zooming out of one of them, you could match them up, and you could see that the stars were moving all over the place and not in a radial direction out from the center of the sun, which would be required for general relativity. But none of that, what they did is they just photoshopped the stars out of the pictures. I mean, this is beyond the pale. This is absolutely beyond the pale. Just a little bit of a note, Elon Musk had a competition to have designers build a pod, so to speak, that would run in his Hyperloop tube. And the competition is now over. The winner won with a speed, a velocity of 201 miles per hour. In other words, you could be transported around certain areas at 200 miles an hour, basically. Pretty incredible. Elon Musk is doing a lot of amazing, great things. I just wish he understood better that he's signed contracts with the devil, the CIA and the military, and a lot of other agencies, Google, Fidelity, that are basically CIA front agencies. And his space organization, SpaceX, once again, he has signed over those, basically they have investments or co-investments with him. And so, he's basically signed off to a lot of really evil entities, let's just put it that way, and the people behind those entities. I was just looking here at, before the show, I was just looking at some of the maps showing the extent of the Hurricane Harvey. It was an absolutely immense cloud system. And so the amount of rain, you know, that came in off the Gulf Coast, and remember that the hurricane, standard science says that the hurricane gets its energy from warm water, which is absurd. But that warm water is evaporated because of the hurricane. And it goes into the, so you had that warm Gulf water being absorbed into the hurricane and then dumping over land. And that continued as long as that storm kept circulating. It kept circulating and lifting more water off the Gulf of Mexico and bringing it inland to dump in the Houston area. And like I say, all of those storm systems are moving north now. A lot more flooding to come. Just another note before I forget it on the webpage. I thought I was going to have time to update the webpage. There's still, the sale is still going on. It did not end on August 27th, so hopefully I'll be able to get that changed so people still will respond to this. But I've been, unfortunately, just a lot of things have happened in the past week, good things, but it's occupied my time, and I had not had time to update the webpage and post radio shows even. That's how, you know, out of normal conditions that I've been. I have not been in these type of difficult time situations in years and years and years and years. But other things are going on, so it's just I'm only one person. But the point is that the Kitchen Standard and the Traveler will be shipping, I would say, by this probably, hopefully, the second week of September. So people are ordering those now, anticipating being shipped, and we don't have an exact date, but you can go in and actually order those, even though the Traveler is not posted yet. But just be assured that, you know, shortly I'll be able to post that and you can actually start to pre-order so that it's available when we're ready to ship those. And we'll have a lot in stock, which is good. But we're retooling the stainless steel containers. That's what's going on, and got us a little bit behind. Also, the large commercial filters, if you want one of those, let me know by email. It's that same email that I gave out before. It's the webpage email address, jmcc@jmcanniescience.com. Send in your order, what you want, the MR5 or the MR9. And the filter packs, the replacement filter packs, are on sale for about half price. Almost half price. And that's when you order them with the original water filter order. So that's still available on the webpage. It says closed out August 27th, but please disregard that. They're still on sale. And so send in an email, tell me what you want, and then we'll get back to you with an invoice. We send you an email invoice for PayPal, and then you pay that way. So at any rate, if the webpage still says August 27th, I'll try and get that changed, but if it does say August 27th, sale ends, ignore that. The sale will continue until I have time to get in there and actually make the changes to the sales page, etc. Remember the wing licensing, same email address, jmcc@jmcanniescience.com. I've seen more of this ridiculous story from NASA wanting to drill a hole into the magma of Yellowstone and then pump water into it. Now, anybody, even regular people that really are not that familiar with my work or my statements about draining the lake at Yellowstone, they all say this is absolutely insane. How could anybody even imagine that? And then to know that NASA had decided this in an internal meeting and may have done this, you know, going out, okay, this is a good idea. We're NASA. We're going to go drill a hole into this volcano and pump water in there and literally destroy the North American continent with a super volcano. I mean, just a complete bunch of idiots. What's his name? Brian Wilcox. If anybody feels like it, just call up JPL and ask for Brian Wilcox and his group to save the planet and tell them what a bunch of idiots they are, you know, to stop. Anyway, what a bunch of complete morons. If you have not heard my August 17th show, make sure you go back and listen to that one. It's a interesting little story I have about the myth of Sisyphus, where I change it a little bit for the upcoming book release. But if you have not heard that show, make sure you go back and listen to it. August 17th, my commercial-free radio show. Okay, since we had Hurricane Harvey, I'm going to review just a little bit the formation of hurricanes and some of the science, the real science involved in the formation of hurricanes. What happens is as the storms form, the clouds, basically cumulonimbus clouds, these are the big puffy white clouds, the thunderstorm type of clouds, start to billow up, and that's due to two things. That's due to the water vapor and the collective force. It's called the van der Waals force. It's a slight electrical force that keeps the clouds. That's the force that keeps the clouds together. But anyway, they start to reach up and get up to 20, 30,000 feet many times or higher. Some of them can be as much as 100,000 feet. And they start connecting with the ionosphere electrically. The electrical current, now when you're over the tropical regions, the typical current up in the ionosphere is electrons, and it's in a westerly moving belt. But what happens is it starts to induce an electrical current. And so the ionized air wants to move upwards, and the electrons want to move downwards. As the electrons move downwards, they continue to ionize the air, and they spread out along the surface of the ocean. And as that ionized air then starts to move in the electric field, of course, the ions are going to try and move up into the atmosphere. They find, as does electricity in all cases, it finds the easiest path, and that is typically where the cumulonimbus cloud is the highest at the top. And so that's where the electrical current forms. But as the ions start to move upwards, they start to move in a vortex, and that is simply due to the gravitational effects of the what we call the Coriolis force. And it's like pulling the plug in a bathtub, and you see the vortex form around the drain, and it starts to go down the drain. Okay, so the same process occurs to form the hurricane, and once it forms, it's an electrical current that keeps the process going. It's like a vacuum cleaner, and that's why the low pressure cell is at the center of the eye, is because it's literally sucking the air up the column, which we call the eye. That's where the circular rotating pattern comes from, etc. So at any rate, that's the basic formation process of the hurricane. And then once it starts to rotate, the winds become higher and higher. They start to evaporate more and more water off the surface of the ocean, sucking up water into the storm system. That water comes up the column, and it spreads out over, it condenses, and then once it gets up into the cooler air, it condenses and then spreads out over the cloud system. And that's where all the water comes from for the rain. So at any rate, that's just a little primer once again on hurricanes. Just a quick comment. There's a solar flare, actually a very minor one, that is going to be interacting with Earth's magnetic field today. So it might be a good time to take the kids out if you're up north anywhere in the United States, you know, within one state of the Canadian border, and get out into the countryside, maybe go camping, and see if you can see the northern lights. August is a typical time when you see the northern lights. And but now, I mean, recently, the last, let's say the last 6 to 8 years, we've had little to no northern light activity. And so the issue is that the sun has been very quiet. Let's just put it that way. So very little activity with the sun. And but within the next day, probably tonight, August 31st, would be an excellent time to go out, get into a dark area, and look north along the horizon, see if you can see the northern lights. And just a little bit of an explanation here. What's going on is the Earth is basically all the time discharging the solar capacitor. And the bulk of the charge-carrying particles are electrons coming from the sunward side. So as we sit in summer, the northern hemisphere is pointed towards the sun. And so the other part of the interaction is that it charges up that region negatively, so we see this influx of positively charged particles, primarily protons from the sun, to neutralize that area. And they interact in the atmosphere. They come piling in, and that's what we see in the auroras. Now, the southern hemisphere also has auroras, and they change annually. So when the northern hemisphere is in winter, the southern hemisphere is pointed towards the sun, so they're getting the bulk of the aurora activity. But you can see on other planets like Jupiter and Saturn, etc., you can see the solar activity causing the northern and southern lights. It's not just a northern phenomena. And what happens is that if you could see the magnetic field lines, they typically, if you're in anywhere in the United States or in northern latitudes or southern latitudes, typically they are almost parallel with the Earth's surface. In other words, but at the North Pole, they're vertical. They come right out of the ground, so to speak, and go vertically upwards. The magnetic fields, when a charged particle crosses a magnetic field, and then that can create a force, a sideways force, and that deflects the particle. And that's going on all the time, where the Earth's magnetic field is deflecting particles. The electrons go one way, the protons go the other way from the solar wind. But at the north and south pole, the field lines come down vertically, so those particles can come down along with the field lines unobstructed. And that's what's going on. So they come in into little pockets where there's, as I say, negative charging going on up in the upper atmosphere. The protons come in to neutralize that, and that is what we're seeing, as those protons hit the atmosphere. And also there are electron auroras, where the electrons are the primary causal particles for the auroras. And as I said, those switch annually as the southern hemisphere moves into their summer. They're pointed towards the sun. They get a different type of aurora than the northern hemisphere, which is then in winter. And some of the wonderful scenes, and I've seen this myself, I've been up on the tundra where you have just flat. It's like absolutely flat, and it's covered with snow. And farther north, there might be ice or lakes, etc. But the snow is white. So what happens is the auroras reflect off of the snow and give you this wonderful secondary effect. So, and by the way, if you're underneath, now I've been completely below auroras, and the auroras were right above me. I could see this like, you could just see the particles shooting down, and they would create kind of like a hole effect where you would look, and all of a sudden that hole would fill with colors. Just amazing. And one time this happened, it was August. I was up on a lake up off of Canada, and this was going on. The aurora was right above me, and I could hear it. And that day I was working in the woods, and I could hear the rain of charged particles. They came all the way down through the atmosphere. They're secondary particles usually. They're particles that are created by the first wave that hit the upper atmosphere. They create a secondary set of particles, and they keep moving. I literally could hear them interacting with the trees. And what it sounded like was kind of like like small particles hitting the leaves. And you could see the leaves fluttering. And, of course, up there they have aspen and birch trees. And you could actually, on a, it was a calm day, so there was no wind. If there was a wind even or a breeze, I probably wouldn't have heard it just from the rustling of the wind and everything. But it was a very still day. And I heard this sound. It was like something, you know, and it wasn't just something falling into the leaves. They were coming in at, who knows, relativistic velocities. I don't even know. But you could tell that these were particles that you could not see. You couldn't see anything in the air. You couldn't see anything falling, but you could hear it. The other thing is auroras make noises. If you're fortunate enough to be underneath an aurora, you can hear the aurora itself. It makes a, and this is the reason I'm talking about this, is because the ancients talk about this. The auroras make a kind of musical sound, and that's because they're interacting with the atmosphere. And you can hear it. It's kind of a, it's hard to describe. It's kind of like an eerie musical sound. That's all I can tell you. It'd be fun for somebody to do an experiment. And I'm going to make a note here. So I'm going to encourage people to, sounds of auroras. And then do that. If kids are out there, this would be something if you could get your parents to take you up far into the, oh, into the northern Canada or something like that, where you see the auroras on a regular basis, to record the sounds of auroras. That would be a valuable scientific contribution, apart from just being fun. But you'd need some really sensitive equipment. It'd have to be on a night when it's really, really quiet, or it could be daytime. It does not have to be at night, because the auroras are going on all the time. And by the way, there are the auroras, you can see them. There's quite a few government websites where you can see the aurora band from outer space. And it, you could tell exactly where it is and then go to wherever you saw it would be on the map. And then just sit under there and see if you can get the point where, and this is what happens also in the wintertime. Things get so quiet, that absolutely quiet. And this is one of the things that I don't think people experience anymore enough, is absolute quiet. There's always something running, a motor, there's Wi-Fi, there's et cetera. I'll tell you a little story. When I was young, I went up to, you know, the family, some relatives had a cabin way, way up in the wilderness. And so I went up there, and of course, at first it was a little nerve-wracking being alone that far away out in the middle of nowhere, but I got used to it as something that more people should do, is becoming capable of going out into the wilderness by yourself for long periods of time, and it changes you, let me tell you, it changes you. But at any rate, I'll tell you this story. I was in the cabin, and there's no running water. It's by a lake, and at night, one night, it was very still. I mean, there was not a breeze. There was nothing. It was absolutely perfectly quiet, except for an occasional wolf off in the distance howling or something. But absolutely perfectly quiet. And I could hear something. And I'm out in the main part of the cabin. There were two little bedrooms and a, like an oil heating stove that burned oil for heat. And then just kind of a little crude kitchen area where you would wash or clean fish, you know, or whatever, out in the kitchen. It wasn't what you'd call a kitchen. It was just like counters. And then you had containers that you would put water in from the lake. And etc. So anyway, I'm there, and I'm hearing this noise. I'm hearing a noise, and I'm like, what is this noise? And it was like, I'll try and make a sound like this on the radio, see if you can see this, hear this. And this would be like, kind of like that, kind of like a noise. And I'm kind of like, little noises, you know, and I thought, is this like a little animal in the cabin or something? So I started walking around and looking, and then I'd stop and listen, and I finally came around into one of the bedrooms where I had some cleaning water that had been using that day with soap in it, and the bubbles were popping. I could hear from the other room the bubbles popping in that pail. And they were little bubbles, you know, little soap bubbles that had been left over from the suds, or whatever you call it, you know, when you mix soap, there's a little bit of foam there. I could hear, out in the main part of the cabin, I could hear those bubbles popping. That's quiet. That's when you know you're all alone. It's quiet. And this is something I'm telling people. Unless you've experienced that kind of quiet and aloneness and solitude, then you are missing out. Because, and you find that all of the, even the prophets, whatever, would go out into the wilderness for long periods of time. It's something that if you don't do that, okay, then you don't. The majority of people don't, but you will not become connected, let's put it that way. And part of my ability to solve problems, to see solutions where other people work completely around them, or like the prime number problem, is my ability to sit down and concentrate and connect with myself and my experiences and put it all together for long periods of time and be comfortable with yourself being alone. Anyway, okay, so anyway, tonight is a good night for auroras to go out and see if you can hear it. And if it's very far away on the horizon, then you will not be able to hear it. I've got about 1 minute left to the show. Just want to remind you, keep an ear out for my upcoming book release. That'll be coming soon. And then if you're interested in the wing generator, any capacity that you want to help, email me. If I don't get back to you right away, just be patient because I've got a lot of things going on. But the email address, jmcc@jmccanniescience.com. The webpage is jmccsci.com. That's the short version of jmccanniescience.com. Just go there. The email is up at the top of the page there, jmccanniescience.com, how you spell my name, etc. And then the sale is still on. The 10% plus an extra 5%. I thought I was going to have time to take that down. I did not, so it's still there. If it says August 27th, ignore that. Also, for the large commercial grade filters, still 10% off plus an extra 5% on the main unit and almost half price on the replacement filter packs when you buy them with the original unit. So look for all of that on my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.